feel your best and amplify your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/shine26 for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/shine26. From lashes for days with the viral Liquid Lash Extensions mascara to awakening your eyes with lift and color from the Brilliant Eye Brightener, Thrive Cosmetics is the go-to when you want to amplify your everyday look. Plus, every product is 100% vegan, cruelty-free, and made with clean, skin-loving ingredients that work with your skin. And for every product purchased, Thrive Cosmetics donates to help communities thrive. So every time you use your favorite Thrive Cosmetics product, you're helping communities you care about, too. Amplify your everyday. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/shine26 for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/shine26.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. I've been looking forward to this particular segment for literally weeks, ever since Nancy Guthrie was abducted on February 1st. I want to just give you a little background on Greg McCrary until he joins us. Greg McCrary, one of the original FBI profiles working alongside all of the initial members of the FBI profiling team. They were one of the first, Greg McCrary was one of the first to instigate this. I want to talk a little bit about his book as well. His book specifically, I want to make sure I get this up on screen. This is just one of them. He has several. But I really hope you all get this book and take a look at it, The Unknown Darkness. It was written actually with Catherine Ramsland, who many of you know, profiled BTK, Dennis Rader, and also was an instructor for Brian Koberger. So he is so entrenched in the profiling community and actually so highly regarded. He has literally profiled hundreds of cases, not only with the FBI for years that he was with the Bureau before he retired, but also as a professional in the realm of expert witness. He has served as an expert witness forever. He is one of my mentors as an expert, not only in the expert witness field. I always go to him when I have a question or a concern or am wondering about a case that I currently have, but he has also just himself been front and center on cases for decades that required expert testimony regarding whether crimes were committed, whether they were committed by the individuals that were accused, whether they weren't. He is amazing. He is who other profilers look up to and were mentored by that you might hear from. He also wrote, and I want to get this name right so I don't butcher it, but he wrote a particular manual, and it's called, I'm so sorry. I want to make sure I get this right. Yeah, the Crime Classification Manual. This was huge. It was written with other profilers and is really kind of the go-to book that profilers and people in academics look at. So it's definitely not something for light reading that you might want to look at, but just that he was a part of authoring that book was really huge. Again, the Crime Classification Manual. I want to also talk about the original profile that had to do with Silence of the Lambs, which we've talked about because of the verbiage that was used in this case. In the Silence of the Lambs, the original inspiration for the movie and looking into the Silence of the Lambs was from an original case that actually Greg McCrary was a part of. The whole inspiration for Silence of the Lambs came from, again, a case that Greg McCrary was deeply involved in. So I think that is also very interesting. I want to talk to him so much about so much of this, but we're only going to have about a half an hour of his time. That's why I wanted to come on early and make sure that I got sort of some of his bona fides out of the way. It's really impossible for me to chronicle everything because there's just too much. I mean, just suffice it to say, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cases that he's worked on profiling, really in the thousands from what I read. I always say hundreds just to, you know, make sure I don't overstate any numbers, but the numbers are really in the thousands because of his decades of experience, both working in the behavioral science unit that became the behavioral analysis unit, working alongside of John Douglas on cases from the beginning. He also, just so you know, was one of the consultants in the show, which I have to say I have not watched, but it's a show specifically sort of focusing on John Douglas, and it was called Mindhunter. And, you know, any of those shows are going to be have some semblance of truth in them and some semblance of authenticity. But they're, you know, they're made for the big screen and the little screen. So they're made for viewership above probably actual preciseness. But just the fact that he was consulted on that and provided consultation on that for those of you who have watched it or know about it. In any event, I see he's here. I'm going to join Greg McCrary to the stage. Greg, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Doing great. I have your book up here. I've been talking with you because I didn't want to waste any of our valuable time, and now we're already at 9:05. So
okay. Well, thank you. That was very kind. I always try to keep the bar of expectation low, so I have a chance of clearing it. But thank you. That was a very generous introduction.
Well, that's how I feel about you. Let's get right into it. I know you're familiar with this case, and I want to really jump right into it. Here is our timeline. I just wanted to put this up for people who might have forgotten after all this time. But Greg, what were your initial impressions when you first heard about this case?
Well, as always, the issue is, and I think it's important for the viewers to keep in mind how we go about doing this. And I'm talking really about the process of criminal investigative analysis, which may lead to a profile. It's kind of the process versus the product. But it's the fundamental, almost an oversimplification, but what plus why equals who? So let's start with what. What happened? Well, I think we can agree that there's an abduction, that we have an abduction based on the totality of the circumstances. But then we get into the why, and that's where this thing gets to be problematic, because we're not sure about the motive on this thing as to why. And so what you need to do is create multiple competing hypotheses. How many different ways can we explain this? And so there's kidnap for ransom. There is maybe a home invasion gone bad sort of thing. Or then there's more of this delusional stalking kind of thing. We can talk about all of those possibilities. So you create these multiple competing hypotheses, and then look at the underlying evidence and see which one tends to be supported. So there are a number of issues, but we can go down that road and begin talking about that if you'd like to do that. So if we think about maybe because the pre-offense behavior and the profile of individuals who would do this is all going to be different. So we first have to understand the motive and get a little more clarity on that. So if we start with the idea this was potentially a home invasion gone bad, or a burglary gone bad, or something like that. I mean, to me personally, I think that's the least likely scenario, but one to consider. And so if you were investigating, what we have to do is really it's a process of elimination, of ruling things out as much as anything else. So what you would look for, what investigators would look for, are prior similar crimes. Was there somebody doing nighttime home invasions, or even during the day, but anything like that, that could provide additional evidence and information about the offender. But I think it's unlikely for a number of reasons that's the situation. One, I don't know of any prior similar crimes or anything like that had occurred. Secondly, if this is just burglars like to go into unoccupied dwellings, they just want to steal stuff. They don't want a confrontation. So many times they do daytime burglaries because folks are at work and they're out of the house and then go in and get stuff and leave. There's no indication anything of value was taken. The guy's backpack was full to begin with. If it was empty, that might be different. Maybe he's bringing an empty backpack to fill up, but you know that backpack was jammed with whatever. He spent a fair amount of time, 40 minutes or so, I think, inside, but yet nothing of any value was missing. I think we can say that she was alive. That blood out front, especially that one pattern it shows that looks like the blood was expired. In other words, expiration. She'd coughed or sneezed or something because there's those very fine mists, very fine spray. So it's more than just blood droplets, which would mean she was alive. She was breathing, coughing or sneezing or exhaling out there. So, you know, so we know that. So, you know, I think it's, and most people who do those home invasion burglaries don't want a confrontation. What are you going to do? Why are you going to take the person? Where are you going to take them? What are you going to do with them? I think it's the least likely scenario, but one that has to be considered. Then we get into the abduction itself. Is this a kidnap for ransom? Well, there's some indication of that early on, because of the demand, the Bitcoin, and you know all of that sort of situation. And then there's the other possibility that we can't really rule out, and I think we need to consider whether this is based on some stalking kind of delusional behavior, because we have the celebrity aspect rolled into this this scenario. She's not just an 84-year-old woman who happened to live alone. You know, she's the daughter of Savannah Guthrie. She's been on TV with her daughter. You have all that kind of celebrity factor that you have to consider on this thing. So, and what we know about that is that morning TV anchors, female anchors, are especially vulnerable to unwanted attention, a lot of fan attention. And that's because the morning programs, different than, the nightly news or something, they thrive on intimacy and being a family and coming into your home in the morning, and they're friendly and they're laughing and it's a good time. And folks that are lonely or delusional develop what psychologists call a parasocial relationship, a delusional relationship with these celebrities. And that can break bad, you know, on some occasion. So if you're investigating that aspect, as I mentioned with the home invasion thing, you look for the pre-offense behavior. In that case, it would be a lot of attention either to Savannah or even to the victim herself, to Nancy. A question I would have if I were investigating this is, who handles Savannah's fan mail? Is this some staffer that's handling it? And, you know, is anybody being alert for unusual, maybe weird emails and contacts? And let me give you a quick side story. I worked a celebrity case of stalking where this particular celebrity had a fan that sent multiple letters a day, gifts a day. Finally, the celebrity said to her staff, "I just need this to stop. This is not good." And they're all adoring letters and huge fan and all this. And some staffer wrote a very cruel letter to this fan saying she doesn't want it, you know, doesn't want your attention, stop the gifts, stop the letters, all that. Well, this person went from adoring fan to threatening to kill her. Now we've created a situation where we provoked a potential for violence just by mishandling that. So I'd want to look at all that, if there's any of that kind of issue going on. And if it was a kidnap for ransom, then that could be part of that as well. It could be based on that, or it could be just a for-profit motive, knowing who she was. And there are different ways to look at that. Then the pre-offense behavior may be someone who inadvertently or coincidentally came across her. They could be doing routine maintenance, maintaining the place, cleaning the pool, fixing the window, doing some roofing, a delivery guy, an Uber guy that dropped her off that knows who she is. Again, I don't want to get into too many other cases. I had another case where a young girl was raped and murdered, and this went on for 2 years, the investigation. We had over 92 different suspects that were developed and eliminated before we finally got to the right guy. He turned out to be a subcontractor for a DHL, I think. He was like, Bob's Delivery Service, and they'd hired him. He delivered a package to the house. The young lady had been there. He came back a couple of days later and raped and murdered her. But it took a couple of years to find that guy, basically. So that's another thing, to be looked at and considered. So I've been kind of rambling and free associating here. So any questions or any thoughts you have, let me know.
Rambling and free associating, that's what I want to hear. I want to hear from you, and so does our audience. Our audience gets to listen to me every day. But for you to give some of these insights, one of the big ones that I thought you mentioned was the fact that this could be simply from a fan that now feels enraged over not feeling liked or understood. And that was one of the original roads, that I went down, but even further back maybe. And let me tell you, Greg, why I mentioned this is the original ransom notes went to local local news stations. And only after 12 hours later did they decide to send it to TMZ, which of course shouted that their goal was to be in the news. They wanted to be seen. Do you think it's any more than that, that those ransom notes, keeping in mind that there were some details that law enforcement said that were missing, such as the watch and the floodlight, that gave some legitimacy?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Because, at least the kidnap for ransom cases that I've worked, it was always, don't call the cops, don't tell anybody, pay the money. And as you noted correctly, the notes went to the media, which would guarantee publicity. So is this more of an inadequate guy who now has the power and now is enjoying the celebrity status, the power that he has over everybody, basically? Now it captivates the country and the world because of the news coverage. So suddenly he's gone from an inadequate guy to a guy with great power. It's the difference between fame and infamy. Fame is very hard to come by. None of us probably are going to be very, very famous, but infamy is easy. You can do it, the mass shooters and that. Pardon me. get the notoriety that they seek. And that seems to be what was going on here with the manner of communicating the demand. And plus, as you said, there appears to be some legitimacy about knowledge, the watch, or those sort of things, which would get everybody's attention that may be the case. But then again, that doesn't, even though it's a kidnap for ransom, it doesn't eliminate at all, this idea of a delusional kind of stalker of some, you know, of some sort. So that can't be overlooked. I think that has to be, you know, one of the avenues of investigation, as well as maybe some happenstance thing, the Uber driver, the delivery guy, you know, that sort of thing. They have to look down, go down that road as well. That's, I mean, those are my kind of basic thoughts about the case. I think the other thing, then we can talk about the post-defense behavior, you know, with this guy. You know, he grabbed this 84-year-old woman. She was injured. She's, you know, you hate to say it, but the reality is she's probably dead at this point. Unless he's keeping her alive someplace and feeding her and, you know, all of that. But she was ill, needed medication. Again, I'm not a doctor, but I just don't think this bodes well, you know, for her survival. I mean, we have to, you know, work with the premise that she is out there and we need to work hard to try and recover her. But I think the reality is becomes less likely every day this goes on. I'll refer to one other case. I worked the kidnapping of Sidney Riso, who was a president of Exxon International. And for, I believe it was $14 million. It was a kidnap for ransom. It turned out he was shot during the initial abduction, died of his wounds subsequently. But those people kept after the money. They wanted the money. And that allowed us to eventually identify them and apprehend them and recover his body later. But the problem here and what we feared in that case is that went on 51 days that they couldn't provide proof of life, as they couldn't in this case. And our fear was that they would panic and withdraw and stop contact, and it would make it much more difficult then to get them identified. Fortunately, they kept coming back wanting the money, and that allowed us to you know, to identify and apprehend them. But here, I mean, that may be a situation. It was a kidnap for ransom. She died. They panicked over the investigation, especially the release of the video. I think that would have definitely spooked this individual or these people if there's more than one involved. So, I mean, all those are possibilities and all obviously complicate the investigation.
You know, I wanted to talk with you about that last possibility.
I'm not hearing you.
Oh, you're not hearing me? Can you hear me now? Greg? Let me make sure I'm not muted. Greg, are you there? Greg, can you hear me?
I'm not hearing you.
Uh-oh. Boy, let me see what I can do to remedy that. Can you hear me now? No.
Oh, I can't hear Jennifer.
Can you hear me in the audience? Can the audience? The audience can hear, so only you cannot hear me. Let me go out and come back, Greg. Let me just see. Come back and go like this. Can you hear me now, Greg? Greg? It's
for some reason, I can't hear Jennifer.
So the audience can hear both of us. Let me take you out and bring you back. Let me remove you and then add you. Can you hear now, Greg? Greg, can you go out and come back? Can you remove yourself and come back by chance?
I'm sorry, I can't hear.
Let me send a message to you. Greg, I'm going to call you.
Let's see.
Sorry about this. You go out and come back. The audience.
Okay.
Here.
All right.
Yeah. He's going to try to go out and then come back. That's the only thing I can imagine. I'm not muted, and you guys can hear me. So I just reached out to him to see if he can do that, because I can hear him. So let me remove him. And then he's going to come back. Greg, can you hear me now? Greg? Oh, I just don't get it. Never had this happen. Okay. No, let me not do that. Let me see if I can add him here. Greg, can you hear me? Can you hear me now? It's very, so let me just, one moment, everybody. I'm going to see if I can get a hold of Greg another way. This is so odd. Greg, can you hear me? No, still can't. Let me give Greg a call. Hey, it's really strange. Here we go. Add you back up. Hey, everybody. Hey,
everybody. Oh, God.
Yep.
That is a
echo. Okay.
Our idea was what I was supposed to do, speak with him and then have him respond, because mostly this is about his words and what he has to say. Perfect. Can everybody hear him? In chat? Okay, I'm waiting to hear. I think everybody can hear him. Can y'all hear him in chat? Okay, perfect. Okay, so here we go. These are the questions. So back to your point about this being an abduction gone bad. I've really been going down this road, and I'll tell you why. It's because I'm such an Occam's razor investigator, always was that way, that the facts tended to lead to the most simplest solution. And can, audience, can you hear him though? No, I'm worried we can't hear you, Greg. I don't hear you on the on there anymore. Try to come back closer, I think. Okay. And then I can always get off when you speak or mute myself. Okay. There, that's better.
Okay.
Okay. So my question to Greg is, Occam's razor, this approach, I've wondered if really this is more simple. In other words, take a look at this picture, Greg, if you can. This is a group of Chilean. Oh,
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like, oh, and you're gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I got close to look at the photo, and then I get close to the computer and start getting all the feedback.
Yeah, this is better. So what are your thoughts about this being an Occam's razor? In other words, it was one of these groups of thugs that are not really cartel-related. They're not in some sort of huge gang. This was a group of Chileans that actually focused on, you know, Mahomes and Kelsey and all these famous people. The FBI arrested 7 of these jokers that were involved nationwide in all of these burglary heists. I realize this, I mean, I truly don't believe this is a burglary gone bad. I think it was very purposeful and intentional. But my question to you is, if it's a group like this, in other words, that wanted to abduct and the ransom and things went south because she died, what are your thoughts going down that path? You know what, Greg? My audience is telling me they can't hear you at all. What I think I'm going to do, if you even have the time, and I know your time is precious, can I create a new StreamYard and just bring you back in? I'm so sorry. Thank you so much. Okay. I'll do that. Okay, bye-bye. Hey, all. I think we've got a solution here. I'm going to create a new StreamYard. We're going to get out of this and send a new invitation. So that is our plan. We don't understand what happened with StreamYard, but that's what we're going to do, everyone. And they can hear you off at the StreamYard. They just couldn't hear you off the other, but he can't hear me. All right, everybody, that's our plan. We'll see you in a moment.